Hello, everybody. Welcome to the 123rd episode of the Manor Podcast. I'm your co-host, Roger Bodie, joined as always with my best friend and other co-host, Michael Hamilton. Michael, the holiday season is upon us. Are you all ready for Christmas? Do you have all your gifts purchased and all of your holiday plans set?
No, I do not. I'm a bit of a procrastinator. I don't know if you knew this about me, but I have not started Christmas shopping yet, so.
Oh, I've never procrastinated once in my life on anything, so yeah. I can't relate to that.
Have you done all of your Christmas shopping then?
Oh, no, not at all. I got, I think we're set with Austin's presents. My wife and I talked it through the other day, so I think we're all set on the sun front. But I still need to do the thing where I order my wife's Christmas presents to your house. But you're a jet-setting, traveling man, so I need to pick a good window for when. I guess I could have done it, like, recently, but I guess in the next few days, too, huh? Maybe I'll do it in the next few days. You'll be around the next few days?
I leave Thursday afternoon for North Carolina.
Okay, well, then I won't do it the next few days. I'll do it next week when you come home. But then you'll leave for Chicago.
2 days-ish, a day and a half before I go to Chicago. After Chicago is pretty safe. I don't know if that's...
But that's like super close to Christmas.
Yeah.
Maybe I just have to take the chance and order them to my house. I wish I had a second house, you know, if only.
You did for a while. did that place sell? I don't remember the update.
Yeah, we sold it over the summer.
Okay, great.
Yeah, paying two mortgages was not fun. It's been nice to not pay two mortgages every month. Let me tell you, buddy.
Yeah, just paying one mortgage like the rest of us.
Yeah. I don't know if the rest of us, because there's still a lot of people who are renting, and then you're not paying any mortgages still. You're just paying
an amount of money, slightly more than a mortgage, to not gain equity in general.
Not more than my mortgage, but I picked a bad time to get a mortgage. Hopefully, you know, Donald Trump gets in office and he sets interest rates to zero again. That could be one good thing, you know, that the president totally has control over. He's in charge of the Federal Reserve, right?
I feel like you're putting me on the spot and I actually don't know how this works.
The president does not set interest rates. That's the chairman of the Federal Reserve.
Okay. From the way you were asking me the question, I was pretty sure the answer was no, but I just am
he does not. Also can't technically hire or fire him technically, but it's like... I guess nothing he does anymore is illegal according to the Supreme Court. So, I mean, he could just assassinate him, I guess, if he didn't like him. But that's another story for another day. And we should talk more about card games.
Yeah, that is more my forte. Definitely something I'm more comfortable talking about.
Okay. Well, we're talking about
the Bazaar, right?
The hot new game or the hot new set, Part the Mistveil. It's been all over the social medias because the Portland Calling had 6 copies of the Mistveil Heroes in the top 8. And somebody sent me a little infographic. I think it was Nathan Crawford or somewhere of the like, that was just like, since Part of the Mistveil released, it's been at least 4 of the top 8 in every top 8 of constructed tournaments, maybe, I think was something along the lines of what the post was saying.
Yeah, that makes sense. When the set came out, there were a few cards that were very obviously very, very powerful. Levels of Enlightenment and Traverse the Universe are probably the strongest cards they've printed this year.
Yeah, 100%. And for like, so from what, Mark the Mistveil came out in May, and then it wasn't until August, July that they did like the book banning, right? August? When did the book banning happen?
Book banning was in September. Because I remember I saw it around camp, around my birthday, and I was like, oh, wow, this will be exciting when I am not busy.
That's funny. I remember that Part of the Mistveil came out around my birthday, which is how I remembered it came out in May. So...
It's a good benchmark.
Yeah.
Or landmark.
Roger and Michael's birthday. If you ever want to think about when things are happening in the year, always relate them to either Michael or Roger's birthday. Surefire way to remember them.
I'm sure that'll work better for us than for them, you know.
So for 4 months there, of those top eights, I'm sure at least four of those, or the vast majority in those top eights, were Enigma, or not Enigma, Zen. Because Zen was just completely busted for a long time. And then a good natural counter to Zen, or I guess a deck that could effectively compete and kind of pick apart his game plan, was new. And so that kind of makes those two heroes just dominate because of how good Zen was for so long in the metagame, right?
Yeah, yeah. Zen was by far the best deck, and I want to say the best way to attack it, but the only way that really saw any success, as far as I am aware, is playing Assassins, and New is just inherently much stronger than Uzuri. Even though Uzuri won Amsterdam, New is just like, gets level 7 Enlightenment, gets all these powerful Transcend cards, gets just a lot of
Mask of Occurring tools. Nightmares is a hell of a card.
Yeah, yeah, it is. Gets a lot of tools that Uzuri doesn't, and Uzuri gets a cool hero power and Shakedown. And so it was better. Mm-hmm. That's just how it is.
100%. And then after the book banning, not only did that nerf Zen, though, it nerfed the entire power level of the game down a peg, right? Like, it took the ceiling that decks could produce in terms of damage just much further down. And then that allowed room for slower decks like Enigma to kind of came out in conjunction with Count Your Blessings coming out in order to like have this life gain. So all of this, I guess, pressure or pain points coming from either Zen or Enigma kind of are all hinged and centered around the book banning in a way, I guess. Do you think that's right?
I would say that. Sorry, it's all centered around the book banning?
Yeah, so I guess the Mistvale heroes dominating. Either it's kind of the tale of two metagames, right? It's like pre-book banning and post-book banning. And pre-book banning, it was Zen because he was just the most dominant aggro deck. And then post-book banning, it's Enigma because she's one of the best setup decks, if not the best setup deck.
Sure. Though, I don't know if Enigma really plays like a setup deck. She just like hits you for a bunch with her Phantasmoclasms and Mirror Guys, and then you're dead.
True. Yeah. I guess the Count Your Blessings Enigma was probably kind of setup-y.
That one was more just a fatigue deck, I think. It didn't really set up either. It just blocked and gained life, and then eventually ran you over with shields in the end of the game.
Okay, that's fair. But I think there was a quote somewhere, maybe from Brian Gottlieb, where when Part of the Mistvale was coming out, they said Enigma was the most fair illusionist that they've ever came up with, and they think that they really solved like the issue with illusionists just being completely unfun to play against, or kind of like if we look back to something like the Spectrum mechanic or even the dragons that were defining of the previous illusionists, they were just really polarized around those mechanics entirely. And when there were premier aggro decks running around that were capable of just presenting large amounts of damage, it makes sense why that quote was made at that time, because really Enigma didn't see very much play in like the top tier metagames while the like pre-book banning, right?
Yeah, I think pre-book banning, Enigma was held back by a pretty atrocious Zen matchup. Like, you could fill your deck with the disruption that you needed to try to compete with Zen. It just like wasn't good enough. You didn't have all the like sneaky attack reactions that Assassin has. At some point, you're going to attack for 6 with a disruptive on hit, and Zen would just throw his fridge in front of you and attack back for 30 plus damage, and it didn't matter, you'd just die.
Yeah, you can't set up ward through that. Like, there's like very little like counterplay to the large bursts of damage that were coming from aggro decks like Zen. And it also makes sense then, if that's the eye that you're, you know, taking the development lens at the time, is in the next set. So, okay, we know that Zen is this hyper powerful aggro dex, and we know we're going to print this sweet new Runeblade Aurora that's going to be able to push lots of damage with Tome of Findall or things like that. And we know that these wizards are going to get access to Tome of Aetherwind and be able to have, or like Acilio having access to Tome of Aetherwind would completely redefine that deck as well. And so the ceiling of those decks also would have been much higher. So their damage potential already would have been much higher, when we've already seen decks like Aurora, you know, be also solidly at the top of the metagame. So if that deck was even better, I think that would say a lot about it. And so it makes sense to put in a little premium defensive nugget in your set and count your blessings, right?
Yeah, I guess I don't think that. Like, I know Count Your Blessings won Worlds, but I still...
played Count Your Blessings at Worlds.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah, I'm just, the point overall is basically, through the prior book banning lens in which these sets were developed, because they obviously didn't plan on banning the books, otherwise they would have banned the books sooner. And the cascading effect of that has just rippled across the metagame since, to an extent, right? And then we even had another new premier aggro deck in Dash.io, and it got one event to really shine in the hands of Sam Sutherland, and then they lowered that deck's damage threshold again.
Yes, I agree with these things.
So in previous metagames, they've kind of done like counterbalancing bans, right? Where they said, okay, we're lowering the power level of Icelander, or I guess, like, I think the biggest one that comes to mind was when they were hitting bans with Starvo. They also hit bans to Viscerai. That was when Skeletta was banned, because Viscerai wasn't dominating at that point. He was good. People knew how scary he was, but he still wasn't like taking over the metagame. But they said, okay, because we're taking, we're lowering Starvo's power level, we also want to ban Viscerai, Skeletta, to bring him down to a lower power level as well, to kind of balance out the format. And I guess with the book banning, should they have banned something out of Enigma, even though she wasn't a problem at the time?
It's interesting because, well, I think Enigma is probably the best deck right now. It's hard because there's not really a card that makes a lot of sense to ban. Like, if you ban one of her Majestics, it definitely weakens her power a lot. But a lot of her Majestics are like part of her identity. Like Restless Coalescence is like a really cool card that, like, as it is a card that leads to a lot of
Restless Coalescence was actually the ban I was thinking of.
But do you want to ban like your? I mean, I guess you could just ban Restless Coalescence.
Yeah. I think it's the perfect little nerf to the deck, because it's just like a good power card that does sometimes like take over games and could be kind of oppressive, but also as a whole is like not really what the deck's about. Like, it's just like a nice extra little power piece bonus to the deck. And I feel like if you're going to like have a targeted ban, right, where the hero gets to keep their blues and their identity and keep doing really powerful traverse things, you just take away one of its like tangent power card, seems like a nice way to like tone it down a little, I guess.
Yeah, that's reasonable. That's a reasonable take. I do think that Restless is probably, it's a lot of the power of the deck that doesn't really get the attention for being the power of the deck. Like Spectral Manifestation into Restless is a 3 card like 5+5+3 if they kill it right, no, +4 if they kill it right away. So 14 if they kill it right away, and if they don't, then it gets even more value, which it gives you a lot of defense with the 2 extra spectral shields plus the 1 from the spectral manifestation. That it's pretty likely you make it back to your turn with the Restless Coalescence with 1 counter on it.
Yeah, 100%. I think I've had not quite as many games as that were like frustrating or ended by Mirror Guy plays. Just because, you know, it's traverse and, you know, Mirror Guy can end the game so, so quickly. But there have been quite a number of games where it's just like my opponent plays a Restless Coalescence, puts a bunch of counters on it, and I'm just like, I can't, I'm dead. Like, this is just going to be an absurd amount of value over the next two turn cycles, because of the amount of rune chance, or not rune chance, spectral shields that are going to be floating around on the field now that I also now will have to clear on future turn cycles, and in the meantime have the potential to keep hitting me for damage as well. Especially if like they follow it up with like the spec, like on the next turn cycle, if they're able to play Enigma spec and put plus one counters on all of those, it just turns into a nightmare.
Yeah. Though I still don't think it was even clear that Enigma was the best deck. She won Worlds with Count Your Blessings, and then they banned blue Count Your Blessings to try to like push back on that. So they nerfed the deck that won Worlds, the Enigma deck that won Worlds. And then in Portland, we saw three Enigma decks in the top eight. And I know I lost my winning in, and I do think Enigma was the best deck for that. But even then, there was still like a lot of, like Zen was still getting a lot of talk. Aurora is supposed to be pretty good into Enigma, though I think that kind of panned out to just not be true. So
I thought Viscerai was supposed to be very good into Enigma. Is that not the case anymore?
So I do think Viscerai is very good into Enigma. I think that there's a small caveat on that. The aggressive versions of Viscerai are very good into Enigma, not sure. the version that like Noah Begelman and Yanji popularized. Yes. Thank you.
No problem, buddy.
That version, taking a setup turn against an opponent that has a mirror guy in play, is just not a winning proposition. Even if they just go Spectral Manifestations into Restless and you have a hand that doesn't present damage and just needs to chain end on making rune chance, like you take so much damage by taking those setup turns, and the value that Enigma gets from just keeping her extra, her auras in play for one extra turn is very high.
Okay. So the aggressive version of Viscerai is quite good into Enigma. Do you think she has like any other like counters in the metagame?
No.
It doesn't sound like a very healthy place for the deck.
I think that aggressive Viscerai is quite good into her. I think Aurora and Zen are both supposed to be good into her, but I actually think the matchups are like, I actually think the Aurora matchup is probably slightly favored for Enigma. And then and that's a big part of why there were three Auroras in the top eight of the last calling, and or three Enigmas in the top eight of the last calling and no Auroras. And then Zen is, I think, a very close matchup.
Okay. It's interesting. I just pulled up I guess we're only 3 days into, okay, never mind. I pulled up the February data. And I was like, oh, wow, Enigma has like a horrible like 32% matchup into Aurora. And then I look at the total games played in December and it's 50 games. Like, doesn't sound like a very large sample size. So let's roll it back a month.
And I also think it's a thing where like at different levels of skill, the matchup changes. Like I think at lower skill levels where Aurora is just kind of vomiting her hand and Enigma is trying to just block it all out, then Aurora is quite favored. But I think that, I guess going into what me and Michael talked about on last weekend's pod, or what we all talked about, is I was talking about maybe you're not even supposed to be playing the Arc Lightning Flicker Wisp combo into Enigmas that are being more aggressive, like the deck that we played that has Scar for a Scars. I think that's kind of how we found our way to fight Aurora, is we're just making her dead so she can't keep her threatening hands and make her combo pieces a pretty big liability. Whereas other Enigmas maybe found other approaches that line up well against what Auroras are bringing to the table, but that worked for us, and maybe it's like the onus is back on the Auroras to adapt and find a new way to fight the different ways Enigma's attacking them.
Okay, yeah, it makes sense. I guess if we look back at last month in November, really her only two matchups that look like really bad, and it's at 34% really bad, are Fi and Zen, where Zen's 34 and Fi's 37, but even Aurora last month was at like 42%, which is pretty reasonable on like even like the disparate skill levels, I guess.
42% is definitely a pretty bad matchup if it's a
truly representative. Yeah, but I don't think it's that bad. Like if you say like, oh man, you're one of your worst matchups is 40%, I'm like, oh, that's really good. You know, it's close to a coin flip.
Your third worst matchup being 40%, I don't think is a great spot to be in. But I don't think Fi, I don't know how many Fis were in Portland. It couldn't have been very many.
No, not a very highly represented deck. Yeah. And even with Zen, I was listening to the Runaways podcast. They were talking where, like, you know, sometimes you just have an awkward hand against Enigma at the wrong time and game's over. Like, she just gets to land a Mirror Guy or a Restless Coalescence or just like create a board or attack you with a Phantasmoclasm on your next hand and ruin that and just kind of takes over the tempo of the game. And yeah. So I think that's what really Enigma punishes the most. It's just like when you falter, she kind of has like the some of the most punishing effects in the game right now.
Yeah, when you have a hand that only wants to play two cards on offense and it's a turn that your opponent just attacked you with Mirror Guy, it's so hard to win the game. And because of that, I actually think Enigma is one of the higher variance heroes in the game right now. And it's weird because a lot of the time when I look at high variance heroes, it's heroes that are like KO, where you're casting Blood Rush Bellow, and if you draw a blue and a red, you're going to kill him. If you draw red, you're dead, or something like that. And you're rolling scab skins. But Enigma is like the opposite. Enigma is like, my hero is going to do the same thing. I'm going to attack with some things. Eventually, I'm going to use my hat and play Mirror Guy. And if you can't present 16 damage on this turn, you're in big trouble. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of just like putting a lot of variance.
And even if you can, it's not like the game's over at that point. It's just like the game plays on. Yeah.
Yeah. That's why Enigma's so good, though.
Yeah, sure. I thought you were saying Enigma's a high variance hero. I was like, I never thought she herself was high variance, I guess.
I think that the games tend to be high variance because the turn you play Mirror Guy.
Yeah, but she's consistently able to implement her game plan at least.
Yeah, she does her thing the same every time. But I would say the games are high variance. Like,
sure, okay.
Like a lot of the time they're landslides one way or the other rather than, I guess, expecting a similar outcome each time you play the matchup.
Yeah, because like against a deck like Dromai, right? So Dromai built up a board and it was just kind of like this slow buildup of like, okay, now there's +1 dragon on the board. Okay, and like, okay, now there's a Chromai and an Ashwing on the board. And like now there's Chromai and Ashwing and Evan Sarakai on the board. Like it was like, it's always like +1 for the most part, except for the most broken card, which was the, whichever one made 3 Ashwings. I forget the name of it.
Break the embers.
Yeah. That was like really her only way to like build up a board super wide, super fast. And that kind of led to like longer games overall because like she just wasn't just closing the door on you. But Enigma is just like out of nowhere. Here's the whole WinCon package board set up all at once right now that wins the game on the spot. And it's like, oh, okay. I kind of wish there was a little bit more counterplay and back and forth in this game instead of the entire game hinging on this one turn cycle.
Yeah, I do agree with that. I would not say that Dromai was exactly the same or exactly like how you said, where it's like kind of gradual. A lot of the time Dromai would keep like, she'd keep a 5-card hand, play Tome, and then play 3 dragons. And
sometimes. So I guess like maybe it's just the decks I played it, they felt longer and grindier because I never played like the hyper aggro decks at the time. So I never got to see like her game plan for like the fast setup.
I do think Prism is kind of like what you're talking about. Old Prism with the Spectra Auras where she plays like
two at most.
One or two auras a turn. Yeah. And then your stupid Guardian just swings hammer at one and cries. those are some low variance games. Prism beat Oldheim every time.
Yeah. Because it's just like, oh, I can crack my stupid action point boots one time for 3 resources and get 2 auras. Oops. That's it. That's the best I got. Okay. So other than banning, so I guess we've seen effects that are coming out in like the next set, The Hunted. Is that the name of the set, right? Is it The Hunted? The Marked? The Hunted, The Marked.
I think it's The Hunted.
The Hunted sounds right.
Or I don't know. I'll be playing it in a month in Prague, but I don't know the name of the set. I think it's
The Hunted. Hunted. It's The Hunted.
Okay.
The one warrior attack reaction that says like damage can't be prevented or whatever. Do you think just more damage can't be prevented effects will help? But like, I don't know. That's really the issue though.
I mean, so it does help because a lot of the time when you know you can't protect your board, you're just like, okay, I'll give it up. It'll get its value on defense. Like, a lot of the time, you'll make a Spectral Shield with your Enigma Hero ability, attack for two, and then get one on defense, and it's like a zero, or it's like a one card for three with go again. But if you're stripping away that one on defense, then suddenly you're spending a card for two, which is not very good value, especially when it's this transcend card that turn into a Chi, you need to jump through hoops to make it happen. Then those kind of things like chip away at the value that Enigma is getting out of her board. I don't think it's that common that like the game, you run away with the game because you have a bunch of auras in play, though Restless Coalescence does sometimes lead to that. And I think that's the most common time that that happens. And a lot of the time Enigma just relies on like a few Spectral Shields to like soak up a couple damage to protect the main aura on big Restless turns. To protect the Restless, I guess, is the aura. And making it so damage can't be prevented at all means now Enigma is forced to block out the attack.
Sure. But I guess like I was thinking that as someone who is like played like the whole game with like attack reactions on new a lot, that I'm like, okay, I'm ready to help clear this board now. And then it turns out Enigma just has 25 million defense reactions as well in the deck. So it's hard to connect a lot of the time, even after the board's like set up with a mirror guy, a lot of the time because of the amount of defense reactions that are still available.
Yeah, that's true. I guess this is kind of a different point, but we could go back to the discussion of banning like sink and or fate as a pretty direct nerf to Enigma. I think Enigma is the best deck that plays those in the most matchups of any of the viable decks right now.
All right, put a pin on that one though. So put a pin in that, because not only has Enigma been dominating, but the overarching thesis of this whole episode, right, is that Mistfail heroes are too good. And on that note, Zen has won several tournaments. He won the Battle Hardened in Stockholm last weekend. He won the Calling in Osaka. And he also had a very solid showing with a couple top eights in Portland as well. And so on that note, is Zen like problematic in the metagame as like just the one of the best aggro decks, or because of his just ability to like naturally counter the other best aggro decks as well with his chess piece?
It's kind of funny how good Zen still is despite getting both Bonds and Art of War banned.
I mean, it makes sense, right? I mean, they designed him to be, or they LSS knew he was going to be a top tier hero or a very good hero, even without Bonds, right? Like if they weren't testing him with Bonds and they thought he was good to go out the door and then compete in the metagame, and they go, oh, oops, he's supposed to play Bonds, and then he was way more powerful. It makes sense why he's still good post Bonds, right?
Yeah, that is fair. That is fair. Zen's very good. I think that I do think that Enigma's better right now, but I think it's very close. And I think that that matchup between the two heroes is quite close. And if you want to beat up Aggro Viscerai, I got the deck for you. Like you said, his chess piece, making that Zen State token kind of on demand, especially when combined with Traverse, is really, really powerful. The fact that you can just like block hat and chest on the first thing, and then after the chest has blocked the two, when they go to close the chain or pass priority or whatever, then you can then make the sacrifice it and make the Zen State before it is destroyed from blocking. It gets quite a lot of just
value.
It just gets a lot of value. Just, I was trying to think, it's not intrinsic value, just like on-demand value where you can just, your opponent sets up this big turn, they keep a five card hand, they play their first attack with they play like Arc Lightning and then play their first attack that gets go again from the Arc Lightning, and you're like, all right, here's my hat and chest, and then the Zen State eats all the Arc Lightning pings and also one damage on every attack, and doing that whenever you want is very, very powerful.
Yeah, so more so than something like Sink Below being banned, like once it, I think the more important through line here is Mistvale necessarily, the cards in it aren't necessarily broken. I guess Levels of Enlightenment is like probably like the most messed up thing, but like whatever. I think all the equipment in Bart the Mistvale was way too good. I guess the Illusionist shoes or whatever, they're like fine. But we look at Mask of Recurring Nightmares, Traverse of Enlightenment, the Kasaya, right? That's the name of the 12 Petal Kasaya.
Traverse the Universe?
Yeah, Traverse the Universe, 12 Petal Kasaya, and Mask of Recurring Nightmares. What did I say? Did I mix up names?
You said like Traverse the Enlightenment or something.
Oh, my bad.
This is fine. It's fine. Yeah, Traverse the Universe, 12 Petal Kasaya, and Mask of Recurring Nightmares are all quite powerful equipment.
Yeah, and I remember last year when they did a bunch of bannings and they were talking about Prism in particular, they said, well, we're really conquering down on the sips, the start in play, stay in plays. And wow, I guess all of these, I guess Mask of Recurring Nightmare stays in play, but the value that all of these equipment get over the course of a game are actually just absurd, right? Like, I think this is the equipment is the real issue with all the Mistvale heroes, between Traverse being able to tutor and get a card and getting an insane amount of value on a block two, 12 Petal Kasaya getting a lot of value on turns you're transcending. So it's getting like, what, 4 or 5 value across a normal game anyways, just on generating that extra resource. And then whatever it can get on the block and then whatever it can get off the Zen State token is absurd. And then Mask of Recurring Nightmares having that recurring ability to strip cards out of your opponent's hand and set up win conditions in end games in which no other fatigue deck has ever been able to accomplish, in that you were actually able to strip every last card out of your opponent's hand, not only their deck. So all of these equipment, I think, are like the real problematic areas of Part the Mistvale.
Yeah, I want to talk about new separately a little later, because I actually don't think new is anywhere near the level of these two other heroes. I think that new is like in a much more reasonable spot. But
sure.
That said, I do think that it's hard for chess pieces to be like, this is way better than Final Spring Tunic in a deck, because, you know, Tunic is just so good. You get a resource every 3 turns, you get Blade Break 1 on it. And 12 Petal Kasaya, I think there's no question that if you're playing Zen, you should be playing 12 Petal Kasaya. You should not be playing Tunic.
Right.
And Traverse the Universe is like
in conjunction with Kasaya too. Like,
sure. But Traverse the Universe by itself, if you've transcended, you're getting the 2 block and you're getting a card from your deck that's much better than a random card, because Chi is like a card that you have to like go on a mission to get in your deck, and you could do something better than you could get from normally pitching a blue with a Chi. You get your hero abilities, and you also get like Mirror Guy, who specifically cares about pitching a Chi, becomes double the stats if you pitched a Chi for it.
Sure.
And getting that on demand and getting the same numbers as what I would argue is, I guess, the 2 other best hats in the game are like Crown of Providence and Balance of Justice.
Yeah. Not even close.
Like, and you're getting the same value as them. You're getting a card from your deck, which, like, that's the dream with Balance, is you block 2 and get a card from your deck. But with Traverse, you're getting that, and you're getting to choose whatever exact card you, or not whatever card you want, but the card that you will want in a lot of spots. You can plan around getting a specific card rather than Balance. You just usually pop the first opportunity you get. You're like, I got 2 block out of this. I got to draw a card. That's great. And that is great. That's a really good spot for a hat. And Traverse is just so much better than that.
Yeah. I'm pulling up all the other hats in the game. I guess the other ninja hat was also very good for quite a long time, and people are probably expecting me to say Mask of Momentum here. Nope, I'm going to say Mask of the Pouncing Lynx was also kind of messed up, being a tutorable card on demand to help you get a lot of value. It was worth like usually like 5 value on your headpiece, which is quite a lot.
Yeah, and noteworthy, I know that this is a different format, but the Zen deck that won the Living Legend Battle Hearted played Mask of the Pouncing Lynx into at least me. I don't know if he was playing it every matchup or just the aggro mirrors, but
sure. Yeah.
It's very strong. Very strong still.
Yeah. And then I'm looking, and I guess like Face Purgatory is really good in its own category.
Yeah, Scowling Fleshbag, Face Purgatory, both quite good.
Yeah, and probably Crown of Seeds, but yeah. All of those, all the other cards had like very high restrictions. Like for Face Purgatory, you have to have two cards of like opposite types in order to use. Crown of Seeds, you kind of are just getting the small incremental value out of a long game, and you have to be able to do other things with the resources or use your Tuna counter. Like they all kind of like ask things of you. I guess even Mask of Pouncing Lynx, you need to have like the two powered attacks in your deck to get. And I guess Traverse asks you to like do the transcending, but that's something you were already going to do on your gameplay. You wanted to actively do on any given turn cycle anyways.
Well, if you're looking at Runeblade and comparing it to Face Purgatory, you have to put attacks and non-attack actions in your deck. And it's like, well, that's what you want to do anyway, your Runeblade.
Sure, but you have to have them lined up in the same hand when you want to use Face Purgatory block, right? Like yeah, I'm saying like that's not
any turn.
Yeah, yeah, that's more so what I was getting at.
Sure, that's fair.
So should they have banned Traverse? I think the answer is yes. That's probably a controversial take. And I guess it'd be the most expensive card they ever actively banned out of a meta. But like, if it's a design mistake, it's a design mistake, you know? Like,
yeah, I do think Traverse was a mistake. I think
they said as much. Brian has said on many podcasts now at this point that he did that they overstated Traverse the Universe.
Yeah, I believe he said it should block one instead of two, which would definitely make it notably worse, but I'm not sure that would fix. I shouldn't say fix. I'm not sure. That would definitely be a decent nerf to both Enigma and Zen, and it would make a lot of Zen's turns where you're attacking with a six power disrupted thing. It's you can't throw the fridge in front of that with Traverse. So that would have been pretty substantial, especially back before where he was trying to just like play a six card Art of War hand.
Yeah, for Enigma, it's probably still not really what the game's about. It still kind of boils down to post that attack or whatever. Once they're ready to set up and go, then like they're going to do their thing. But it's at least like an extra point that could matter, I guess. I don't know. But
yeah,
that's not the world we live in anyways.
The one life would matter. And I do think that there were times where the turn that you would use Hat to make your mirror guy, you would be able to protect like one shield or something that helps protect the mirror guy in the future because Traverse blocks two, and then you get a turn on your shoes when you play the mirror guy, which blocks three more, and you can protect a little bit of a board that way.
Yeah, I was gonna say, or the mirror guy's in your arsenal, but then you could always just play in response to a Command and Conquer trigger anyways. But
yeah, so I think Traverse would be weird from budget and those kind of things where like people are like spending a lot of money on this legendary and then they ban it. But I mean, Art of War was not cheap when they banned it. So
yeah, arguably the same amount of money, right? I guess we can look at this is getting into weird finances, right? But Art of War was like $40-$50 when they banned it. So three of that is $150 in any given deck that it was banned out of. I guess in this one though, you're banning it out of multiple decks.
Two and a half.
Yeah. So
but Art of War was getting banned from multiple decks too, right?
That's like true.
Ninja played Art of War and
yeah. So the total net value lost is probably much higher out of Flesh and Blood economy from banning Art of War than it would banning Traverse.
This is kind of an interesting point, though. Is it? The Mystic Heroes are very good, but a lot of other heroes have seen success despite the Mystic Heroes dominating. We saw Aurora do great at Worlds, even though she had a rough weekend in Portland, and I still think Aurora is a little bit overrated. Mistrai's done quite well, won quite a few pro quests. Even Florian has done pretty well despite what I think is an abysmal Enigma matchup.
Sure. Yeah, I guess maybe I'm putting the cart before the horse, because I guess this whole episode was supposed to be in defensive Mistvale, and that it's not that big of an issue, and I'm just like going down this train of thought of okay, it is an issue, where that wasn't necessarily why I wanted to start this argument anyways, but fair enough. Good way to pull me back.
So I do want to talk a little bit about new as well, and I think new kind of gets an unfair shake being thrown in with these heroes. New is like a hero that specifically benefits from your opponent playing really powerful blues, and you're encouraged to side out your best blues against her. I think that a lot of new success is on the back of these other two Mistvale heroes being so strong, because you know who has the best blues in the game? The Mystic Heroes. And I guess Guardians too, if you're playing them for free, but the Mystic Hero specifically, I think New lines up extremely well against Zen, quite well against, well, I shouldn't say quite well against Enigma. I think she lines up okay against Enigma. It's,
yeah, the badness of that matchup is quite overstated.
Yeah. And I would argue that the reason that Nu has been so successful is we saw it when Zen was dominating the format, like Nu.
Yeah, that was really the most well of her success in the metagame overall.
And then since then, even at like the world's metagame, I played against a decent amount of Mystic Heroes when I played Nu, and I wasn't playing like, I guess the two Nus, or no, there was only, I was the only Nu that made top eight, and I was Count Your Blessings, like a weird fatigue Nu that didn't even have access to that tool until recently. And before that, I think, oh, it doesn't have access to that tool again, though Victor did top or finals with red and yellow, but it's missing blue Count Your Blessings. But what I'm trying to get at is Nu is quite good into heroes with good blues. I think that Aurora lines up pretty well against Nu now, at least now that Count Your Blessings is gone. And Viscerai has also been quite good against Nu, especially without Count Your Blessings. So
true.
I don't think that Nu really like belongs in this conversation, I guess. I think that she's doing well because she's attacking the Mystic Heroes, which are probably the two strongest decks right now.
That's fair. I can give you that. And Nu also has, like I guess I was touching on before, with Mask of Recurring Nightmares, this consistent disruption access to our game plan. And that still doesn't necessarily line up all that well into, like you were saying, like Aurora or Viscerai, where sure, they're going from a 5-card hand to like a 4-card hand potentially. But if that's the only disruption you're presenting, like you're still going to lose more races than not because your normal attacks are so far below rate.
Yeah, though your normal attacks do have disruption attached to them as well for the most part. I think that's like...
Sure, I was thinking cards like Blue Bonds of Agony or like stuff like that.
Yes. And it's definitely not free to transcend, and I think Nu is the worst of the three heroes at transcending because you don't have that many blue cards that are great on their own.
Yeah, or have go again that you can like do other things off post transcending anyways.
Yeah,
like you're really setting up for this one big momentum swing usually, and like if that momentum swing fails, like your opponent has like the defense reaction or a fridge, or you just don't have it. And then like you fall behind, or you have all this momentum built up from disruption, and then you have a turn cycle with no disruption, and then your opponent's just right back in the game again, it feels like.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think the fact that I think Nu kind of isn't great into a lot of the heroes that have been good in previous metas before the other Mistfail heroes show up, like KO and Kasai, I think are both pretty tough matchups for Nu. I don't feel great fighting either of those heroes with Nu. And
I think KO's fine.
Sure, if you have like, I don't know.
KO has some good blues to play still. The KO's good blues can be a liability in that matchup. You say like she's best when your opponent has good blues, like KO's blue fives, sure, and stuff like that are still things you're,
that's fair. She has game into KO, but it's not like she's really preying on KO, I guess.
Yeah. I think the matchup is probably like coin flippy, but maybe slightly favored for Nu. If like,
sure.
Yeah. But yeah,
I haven't played a lot of either. I haven't played a lot of that matchup, just a couple games, I guess. And that was with Count Your Blessings.
Sure.
I think that Kasai is a hero that was good before.
Oh yeah. Kasai showed up. Bodies Nu. That matchup. We played that. I was like, I want to see how bad this was. And it was felt real bad. I got dumpstered in that when we were playing those games.
And I guess Aurora, I'm not exactly sure how Nu does into Aurora, but I've heard a lot of Aurora say they feel very good about the matchup. And I think, again, Aurora is a hero without good blues. Like, you want to play a blue Heaven's Claw? Okay, you got it.
Yeah, it is not my favorite matchup for sure.
So I think that Nu both lines up well against these Mistfail heroes, and they're basically forced to sideboard out a lot of the cards that make them as powerful as they are. Like Levels of Enlightenment is a very
oh yeah, I have a real good Enigma matchup on new when they leave in Levels of Enlightenment. That matchup gets so much better when they leave in Levels.
And new just says the cards that make your hero as strong as it is, you just can't play them against me.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why I think we've seen a lot of success from new, despite being, I think, objectively not as powerful as these other two heroes.
Fair. But still, if the other two heroes are problematic, banning Traverse out of them makes sense because it also then doesn't hit new either.
Sure, sure. I guess when, like, if there's a healthy, like, I don't know if healthy is the right word. If there's three different heroes at the top of a format or all doing really well in a format, is that a metagame that you need to take action against?
No. Unless they're from the same set, and then you need to take action. Then it's a problem because they're all from the same set. That means the set was the problem, Michael.
Okay. I do think the fact that there is overlap in their card pools, like two of them are playing, or the two strongest ones, in my opinion, are playing Traverse. All three of them are playing Levels of Enlightenment. I do think there is some overlap, and they're all playing the same Transcend cards. They're all playing, like, there's only nine of them, or yeah, eight of them that they can all play, and Zen and Enigma are maxed on them, and New is playing, like, five of them. So there is overlap there, but I don't know.
I don't know either, but, you know, I also think it's silly to a certain extent to be this frustrated with Mistvale at this time as well, that kind of erupted after Chicago, because
Portland.
We're supposed to, Portland, sorry, Chicago's happening in next week, out of Portland, because we're going to get a whole new set in, like, We've seen already a couple of cards that seem like they have game into kind of Enigma or like these heroes. I guess Zen kind of gets a boost in whatever these new ninja cards are, maybe.
Yeah, we'll see. Zen decks are pretty tight on playables. I think there's not a lot of cards that Zen's really looking to cut right now.
Yeah. And I guess, like, the biggest thing is what could be, like, maybe new getting some cool new assassin cards out of the set, potentially. Like, that could be a bit pretty big power buff to her, because, like you were saying, like, a lot of her individual cards are kind of, like, kind of mopey when you look at them. So maybe she can improve some of those. But it's a set focused on reds, and she's still a hero that is wanting to play 30 blues at any given matchup. So,
and also, I think if these decks are, like, anywhere close to mono red, like we saw Dromai, and even like current Phi decks are pretty close to mono red right now. I think these decks might be pretty tough for new to play against.
Yeah, that's fair. But it's going to be a whole new metagame. In, like, also, people kind of bash me when they, like, I've been brought up this point where it's just like a card come out in the supplemental slot that kind of shakes things up as well. And I guess having this much frustration, I guess I feel silly for even asking for bans now throughout this episode too. I don't know why I got so hung up on that, but the whole format's about to change. We're about to get a whole new set. Anything could happen.
Yeah, and although Rosetta, like, wasn't as splashy on the format as Mistfell was, I think its impact was really felt. I think that Aurora and even Florian, they are doing fine. Aurora with two in the top.
And I think Acilio's kind of been the breakout deck too recently, right? Like, people are finally kind of figuring out that deck more.
Yeah, yeah, and I think that Rosetta also breathed life into the old Runeblades that haven't seen a lot of success recently. Like, Viscerai and Vincent both are real decks now, and that wasn't the case before.
True. True. Okay. Any final thoughts before we wrap things up?
I do want to push back against bans. I think that you kind of talked about feeling silly, but I do think that the community is very, very ban happy in spots where I think the game is, like, probably fine. I think that people, like, when a deck is good, it gives time for people to figure out how to fight it and build counters to it. And if, as soon as a deck does well, something gets banned, it doesn't really leave the community with much time to figure out how to fight it. This is such, like, Flesh and Blood is such a hard game, and I think that the dynamics of matchups are really complicated. Even matchups that have been played many, many times, people still disagree on like who's favorite or what even the best approach is. Like we've seen, I keep going back to Guardian versus Dromai, where both sides said they were 90% in the matchup, and we saw tons of different approaches from both sides, where like we had Mara Farish just like trying to smash them with cheap go-again attacks, and we saw other people putting like red unmovable in their deck to just like block out these big Guardian attacks. And I think that if stuff gets banned all the time, there's just less time to kind of solve the problems in front of you. It is exciting when things get shaken up. Like when the book banning happened, like these were bans that were very like, there's a reason we need to ban these cards. This isn't what we want the game to look like. And I think that the book bannings were great for Flesh and Blood in general. But I think that just Enigma and Zen are 1 or 2 percentage points better than we want them to. We should ban something. I think that's like not always the best approach to the game. And there are decks that line up well against each of them individually, and potentially one that lines up well against both of them that just hasn't been solved or found yet.
Yeah. I think to a certain extent, maybe like just internet and like game expectations have just changed so dramatically around TCGs, because, you know, like a game like the Bazaar or any digital game, like, oh, there's an issue, this card's problematic, or oops, there's an issue, this is too good. It's just like hot fix, it's out. Well, we'll fix it. Oh, we've now lowered this card's output by 1. Like this card's fixed. Like it's just so much easier to have like these dynamic, easy in and out fixes, and anything's not a physically printed real world static card game. And even then they've still gone back and just hot fixed Briar, which was, you know, like a wild thing to do looking back on it. So I think that kind of stems from a lot of like the pushes for constant bans, because people just want the new thing now, new thing now, new metagame now. We saw this metagame now, no, 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 no. And like patience is a virtue, it turns out. Well, the next time you are being patient, always remember, mind your manners.